got handed an Ayn Rand sandwich straight from the can. It tasted so bland. I asked a lass to pass me a glass of Engels Conditions of the Working Class. Right away they dragged me to the committee to explain my un-American activity. They're gonna see they made a mistake if they'd only let me play my mixtape. I'm not partial to the Marshal or the plutocrats in their beaver hats, and the fascists have the outfits, but I don't.
Welcome again to the Strange Brew Podcast. My name's Jason Barnard, and that was They Might Be Giants, The Communists Have Their Music, their latest single. Playing that because we have John Linnell, who, alongside John Flansburgh, were responsible for some of the wittiest, most infectious music of the last, 20 or 30 years now, and it was just brilliant to speak to John about that track, the band's latest album, and the tour that they're currently in the middle of. So let's get into this and hear my chat with John Linnell. Hello.
Hi there.
Is that John?
This is John.
Hi, John. Jason Barnard here.
How are you?
I'm great, thank you. I mean, obviously, one of the main reasons we're talking today is that you've got a new single out, The Communists Have the Music.
Indeed.
Yeah, what was the inspiration behind that song?
Well, it's a hard one to say precisely. I think that there's something very appealing to me about the songs being kind of open-ended. Like, if it's not 100% clear what the meaning of the song is, that's a good position for the listener, I think. But it's based partly on this notion that I remember discussing even with Mr. Flansburgh when we were in high school, which is the idea of that some bands were powerful and some bands were tuneful. So there's this sort of idea of like, which do you prefer? Like some, and I can't even remember particularly which bands were being put into which category, but it was sort of it was this dichotomy of, preferences. So I was just reminded, and it reminds me of another, I don't know if you've heard this quotation, but the writer Fran Lebowitz once said, "The problem with communism is it's too boring, and the problem with fascism is it's too exciting." So I was just kind of basing a song around those kinds of notions.
Yeah, and you seem to be very productive at the minute. You've still touring with your last album, I Like Fun.
Yes.
But you know, introducing lots of new music through Dial a Song as well.
Yeah. Well, we've had a year. We've done this in the past. We've had a year of putting out a song every week, as a kind of a way of introducing music that wasn't just the all at once album, you know, thing. Although we're doing that, we've done that as well. The idea of Dial a Song is this continual supply of new songs every week to keep everybody interested. We did that in, I forget, I think maybe 2015 as well. A couple of years ago, we did one of these year long song every week rollouts. And that was, you know, that worked pretty well. It's a little bit hair raising because we have to prepare a lot of material in advance. And even on the year, and we're still trying to come up with more songs to fill out the whole year. And trying to improve, you know, continue adding songs to the pile in the hopes of improving the quality of the batches rather than, you know, in other words, we've got a long backlog, but we want to keep writing songs, coming up with new songs so that we can put out the best ones we've got.
So will the 52 tracks, will you naturally kind of pare them down for the sort of new record? Is that how it works?
Yeah. We'll have, so I like Fun actually included some of the tracks off this year's selection, and then we'll have one other album's worth of songs on this collection, which is going to be called My Murdered Remains, which is also a line from one of the songs on I Like Fun. There's something like 12 other tracks which are also sort of discrete project called The Escape Team, and songs about these mutant kind of characters, partly based on the work of this artist named Big Daddy Ed Ross. What it is there's a contemporary artist who's done these characters, and his characters are partly based on these 1950s drawings by Ed Ross, who did, I don't know if you're familiar with this guy's stuff, but he did, I guess I would characterize his work as monsters driving hot rods. often it would be somebody with their tongue hanging out, and maybe they have 11 eyeballs, and they'd have one hand around a stick shift sticking out of the hot rod, and their tongue was hanging behind them as they were, you know, flapping in the breeze as they were zooming down the highway. It's a particularly beloved dial of cartoon from the 1950s, I guess, early 60s. He also created a character named Rat Fink that a lot of Americans my age are familiar with.
Oh, yeah. It did come across these shores.
Okay.
Going back to I Like Fun, you really do sort of mix it up, you know, in terms of your lyrics and instrumentally. So with Let's Get This Over With, I don't think there's any guitars on that one, is there?
There are no guitars. Well spotted, yeah. We've tried to come up with some different sounds. And when we're recording, we're not always thinking strictly in terms of the live format. So sometimes it's a challenge to do the live version of a song that we've recorded because we, you know, made it hard for ourselves.
The drumbeat never changes tempo. It's steady like a rock, and like a rock, it crushes you as it gets louder. The drum gets louder and louder, and you know there is no parking on the dance floor. And when you wake up, you can feel your hair grow, crawl out of your cave, and you can watch your shadow creep across the ground until the day is done. All the while the planet circles round the sun. Everybody knows how this goes, so let's get over it and let's get this over with. Even when you're out of work, you still have a job to do. Even when you don't know what it is your job.
what it is. What it is it's coming to get you. I'm talking to myself even when I'm saying you. And when you wake up, you can feel your hair grow, crawl out of your cave, and you can watch your shadow.
Mentioned this before when we were talking about the communists have the music in terms of being very comfortable with I don't know if ambiguity is the right word, but in terms of your lyrics kind of not.
I think that's ambiguity is a good word. I think that's perfectly appropriate. Yeah, I like other bands where the meaning of the song is not 100% obvious. You know, I like hearing songs where I don't necessarily know what's going on. You know, I mean, independent of the quality, obviously you can have a bad song that's obscure or hard to figure out, but ideally it's the song is both interesting and drawing you in, and, you know, there's a nice, there's something nice about not completely understanding what the song is about.
'Cause that's happened a number of times in relation to your songs, you know, even going back to you know, the beginning of your career and songs like Don't Let's Start, where fans have kind of read meanings, yep, particular absolutely. Meanings into songs.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the fact that people come up with their own interpretations. And, you know, I think that there are some that are wildly, you know, wildly interpretive, and people come up with things that seem, you know, bizarre to me. But I like, you know, the creativity of people, you know, just trying to imagine or making associations, you know, coming up with, you know, free associative interpretations.
Don't go, let's start. This is the worst part. To believe for all the world that you're my precious little girl. But don't let's start. I've got a weak heart and I don't get around how you get around. When you are alone, you are the cat, you are the phone, you are an animal. The words I'm singing now mean nothing more than me out to an animal. Wake up, smell the cat food in your bank account, but don't try to stop the tail that wags the hound. D-world destruction, over an overture. And do I need apostrophe? D need this dungeon. Don't let's start. This is the worst part. Could believe for all the world that you're my precious little girl. But don't let's start. I've got a weak heart and I don't get around.
Everybody dies frustrated and sad, and that is beautiful. They want what they're not, and I wish they would stop saying debity dog doggy ding dang debity debity dog doggy ding dang debity. World destruction over an aperture. And do I need apostrophe T? Need this touch? Don't let's start. This is the worst part. The belief for all the world that you are my precious little girl. But don't let's start. I've got a weak heart and I don't get around. How you get around?
And you mentioned that free association, that seems to link neatly into Anna Ring. I mean, that's got like so many different threads and ideas lyrically in.
Yeah.
And then there's the story about getting inspiration from the phone book for that song.
Yeah, well, I suppose, you know, sometimes I think the excitement of writing the song kind of gives the whole thing a momentum. It's not necessarily clearly thought out idea for a song, and I think it that can cause a problem, but it is maybe compensated by the enthusiasm that goes into writing it. So that, in other words, if you're feeling sort of interested and excited enough to come to pursue an idea that is not altogether clear, it makes it interesting and fun, even if the thoughts that are going into it are a little blurry.
Make a hole with a gun perpendicular to the name of this town in a desktop globe. Exit wound in a foreign nation, showing the home of the one this was written for. My apartment looks upside down from there. Water spirals the wrong way out the sink. And her voice is a backwards record. It's like a whirlpool and it never ends. Anna, Anna and I are getting old and we still haven't walked in the glow of each other's majestic presence. Listen, Anna, hear my words. To the ones you would think I would say if there was a me for you. All alone at the 64 World's Fair, 80 dolls yelling small girl after all. Who was at the DuPont Pavilion? Why was the bench still warm? Who had been there? Or the time when the storm tangled up the wire to the horn on the pole at the bus depot? And in back of the edge of hearing, these are the words that the voice was repeating. In the glow of each other's majestic presence. Listen and I hear my words. They're the ones you would think I would say if there was a me for you. When I was driving once I saw this painted on a bridge.
I don't want the world, I just want you to have.
They don't need me here and I know you're there. Where the world goes by like the humid air. And it sticks like a broken record. Everything sticks like a broken record. Everything sticks until it goes away. And the truth is we don't know anything. And Anna and I are getting old and we still haven't walked in the glow of each other's majestic presence. Listen and I hear my words. They're the ones you would think I would say if there was a me for you. In the glow of each other's majestic presence. Listen and I hear my words. They're the ones you would think I would say if there was a me for you. Anna and I are getting old and we still haven't walked. In the glow of each other's majestic presence. Listen and I
And going into Flood, which is, you know, one of your most sort of well-known, almost revered albums now, and then obviously, certainly over here in the UK, Birdhouse in Your Soul became, you know, such a huge track. Did that success here in the UK take you by surprise, or have you always got that kind of slightly anglicised influence?
We were definitely influenced by a lot of British music, beginning with the Beatles. Really, the original sort of thing that got both John and I interested in writing songs and doing music, you know, when we were quite small. But we didn't have a clear idea of what the potential for something like what we were doing was. And we didn't, you know, we were not counting on it being a career. We sort of thought we'd write songs and record them, you know, as a kind of amateur pursuit. And then, you know, we had ways that we could perform the music using a background track in the Lower East Side of New York. So we managed to scrape together shows at little spaces, little performance spaces in New York in the mid-1980s, using a tape, us, the two of us, and a tape recorder, and that was the show. And it was very inexpensive and easy, and it's kind of a good way for us to get our thing across. You know, I guess we've always been kind of control-y about how we put our thing together. So we thought it would be good if it was just the two of us and we made tapes, and we could, we wouldn't have to be in the position of trying to boss other musicians around, who might not agree with everything we wanted to do. And that's how we started. We did that show for about 10 years, as a duo, right through getting a indie, record deal and touring, first in the US and then internationally, and then getting a major label deal. And it wasn't until we'd been doing that for quite a while that we started hiring other musicians. That was kind of late in our whole arc, that we got a band together. So it wasn't until the early 1990s that we got a drummer and a bass player, and that's been our format ever since then. So now we're going on, you know, 25 years as a full band.
Killing Jason off and countless screaming arguments. not to put too fine a point on it. Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet. Make a little birdhouse in your soul. While you're at it, leave the dying light on inside the birdhouse in your soul. Not to put too fine a point on it. Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet. Make a little birdhouse in your soul. While you're at it, leave the night light on inside the birdhouse in your soul. Not to put too fine a point on it. Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet. Make a little birdhouse in your soul.
Was that around the time of John Henry? The album.
That's right. Yeah, John Henry was when we switched over. Or John Henry, we recorded after switching. I guess we were touring to support the Apollo 18 album when we decided to get a full band.
That's another album that's kind of certainly by fans is really, really sort of well regarded. Tracks of yours like The End of the Tour.
I guess so. Yeah, you know, it wasn't as well received when it came out. I think the people who liked us as a duo were kind of disappointed by John Henry. And interestingly, just in, you know, connection with what you were saying, we'd had a lot of success in the UK after Birdhouse and the album after that. And then there was a definite backlash. We'd been on the cover of the NME and stuff like that. And then by the time of John Henry, I think that there was a kind of a backlash against our thing, and there was a bunch of bands that had come out that were sort of held up as like, this is the thing now. And I think we were definitely not part of that scene. We didn't sound like Nirvana, and we didn't sound like Oasis, you know, and those were the sort of the two big things that were happening at that moment in the early 90s. So I think we were sort of on the outs in the, certainly in the UK press at that moment when John Henry came out. And it took us a little while to become, you know, okay to say that you liked us in the press again.
It's when the zeitgeist around the time ends and then the music holds up.
I hope so, yeah. I mean, we had to keep plugging away, but I think it was a little bit disturbing how, first of all, how much we'd been embraced, and then how much we were rejected in quick succession.
There's a girl with a crown and a scepter who's on WLSD, and she says that the scene isn't what it's been, and she's thinking of going home, that it's old and it's totally over now. It's old and it's over now, and it's over, it's over, it's over. Now I can see myself at the end of the tour when the road disappears. If there's any more people around when the tour runs aground, and if you're still around, then we'll meet at the end of the tour. The engagements are booked through the end of the world, so we'll meet at the end of the tour. Never depart since the day we met out on Interstate 91. I was bad metal, you were a flaming wreck. When we kissed at the overpass, I was sailing along with the people, driving themselves to distraction inside me. Then came a knock on the door, which was odd, and the picture abruptly changed at the end of the tour when the road disappears. If there's any more people around when the tour was the vehicle, these were the people, you opened the door and expelled all the people. This was the vehicle, these were the people, you opened the door and expelled all the people. This was the vehicle, these
I mean, that's the interesting thing about picking songs of yours, is that you can pick a song off every album, you know, it still holds up. You know, songs like Dr. Worm, which I think is quite a big live favorite.
Uh-huh. Yep. Still play that every night, pretty much. I don't know what the songs sound like to young people, to young ears now. I know how it felt at the time. And I'd say, like, there were contemporary bands that we felt like, if we didn't sound like them, we felt this kind of kinship with them throughout the 80s and into the 90s. And then at a certain point, I feel like, well, we were just kind of going to do our thing. And it wasn't so much about any kind of contemporary, not that we'd ever really been part of a contemporary scene, but we had mutual affection for bands like the Pixies and before that for some of the bands that were playing in New York in the 80s. And then after that, I think by the end of the 90s, I kind of felt like we just were doing our thing, and we couldn't really worry about whether we sounded contemporary or not. I still don't really have a sense of whether we sounded like anything that should be on the radio or should exist by the you know, into the 90s, certainly by the end of the 90s. And since then, you know, I mean, now we are definitely just old timers doing our thing. And it's been a long time since we've kind of, I think, thought we were even related to anything that was happening that was contemporary. But we are still very, very interested in pursuing the, you know, maintaining the quality of what we're doing on our own terms.
They call me Dr. Worm. Good morning, how are you? I'm Dr. Worm. I'm interested in things. I'm not a real doctor, but I show you. I'm interested in things. I'm not a real doctor, but I am a real worm. I am an actual worm. I live like a worm, and I like to play the drums. I think I'm getting good, but I can handle criticism. I'll show you what I know, and you can tell.
Dial a Song, though, which you kind of pioneered in the 80s, and what you did with the album Long Tall Weekend, and this, again, great tracks on there like Older. You found a way before the internet really took hold of reaching directly to your fans?
I guess that was part of the philosophy from the beginning, was that, and Dial-A-Song was part of that, was that we wanted people to feel like we were their band, you know, that they were the ones who discovered us and they had a personal, you know, stake in what we were doing. And it's, you know, it's kind of a second guessing stunt in a way. It's like, how do you do something that, you know, and I guess like we'd always thought like, well, what kind of music would we like if we, you know, if we could just invent a band that we ourselves would be interested in. And part of the idea was like, well, we always like this thing where you find something on your own. You feel like it wasn't being shoved down your throat, but it was something interesting that was your personal discovery. And in some ways, Dial-A-Song put that across. I think that it was like you called up the band yourself and you were directly connecting to us. And then, you know, just philosophically, it's sort of in a more general way that we were something that people that they felt like they were doing some of the legwork of reaching out to it. You know, that's a very mixed metaphor. I'm sorry for that.
Marching on, and time is still marching on.
This day will soon be at an end, and now it's even sooner, and now it's even sooner, and now it's even sooner. This day will soon be at an end, and now it's even sooner, and now it's sooner still. You've ever been, and now you're even older, and now you're even older, and now you're even older. You're older than you've ever been, and now you're even older, and now you're older still.
But even with your lyrics, they seem very inclusive in a way that, you know, so for example, with politics, they're not overt. You can, there are sort of shades in things, but they're not kind of direct statements as such.
Yeah. I think that, and there are a few exceptions that I remember. There was a time when I was sort of alarmed that John Flansburgh had written this song called Your Racist Friend.
Oh, yeah.
Because it seemed to me that at the time that it was such in a way, sort of an obvious thing to say, racism is bad. Not that that's what he was saying in the song. Mm. It's more like a story song about this position you're in when somebody you know has a friend who's a racist, and then you're in this social situation, and it's just more about this very personal, awkward thing. But it was enough of a political sort of thrust that I was concerned that we were moving into an area of like just saying blunt things. What's the funny thing is, at the time, and I turned out I was wrong about this, I thought, you don't need to say racism is bad. And now it sort of turns out you do need to say that. Like, it's not, apparently it's not as obvious as I thought.
Mm.
You know, we've moved into this era. This is like 25 years later. And And now it turns out that it's not so obvious. So that it's very interesting to me, you know, like, oh yeah, like that cloistered sort of provincial world that I came from, where everybody agreed in this certain set of liberal values, is certainly not the way the rest of the world thinks uniformly. And we're now in fact in the situation where there's a lot of very, you know, different and disturbing viewpoints out there that are it turns out are popular, you know.
In terms of kind of approaching this kind of the sort of attack on what's known as the liberal consensus, will you kind of let your lyrical muse just take you wherever it goes, or will you think, well, you know, we don't?
Yeah, I think that John and I certainly would agree about this. You know, we're artists. We're trying to express an artistic, you know, an idea, something that you leave the pontificating and, you know, and the punditry to the people who are writing prose pieces in the newspaper, and they're certainly way better at it. They're much more eloquent than we could ever be. We're just kind of, I would say, reaching for something that might be almost out of reach, that's in the realm of the imagination and expression and those kinds of things. And that's where we're at. And then, you know, there are politics can creep into it, but in, I think, mostly in a tangential way. And it's not for us. It isn't really our part to sort of get into this sort of straightforward polemic. You know, that's not what we're doing. On the other hand, I think there are bands and artists, songwriters who do that, and they do it well, but that's not our thing.
This is where the party ends. I can't stand here listening to you and your racist friend. I know politics bore you, but I feel like a hypocrite talking to you and your racist friend. It was the loveliest party that I've ever attended. If anything was broken, I'm sure it could be mended. Some bullet head and the madness that he's saying. This is where the party ends. I just sit here wondering how you stand by your racist friend. I know politics bore you, but I feel like a hypocrite talking to you, you and your racist friend. This is where the party ends. I can't stand here listening to you and your racist friend. I know politics bore you, but I feel like a hypocrite talking to you and your racist friend.
There's also sort of tracks that again, fans, people kind of interpret in a certain way, you know, songs like When Will You Die?
Yeah.
And trying to work out. But that's a sort of construct, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say that particular song is, in a way, a great example because it's the most open-ended track, you know. I mean, there really is no specific target, but it's a delightful, it's exciting and fun for me to consider that it might be about somebody in particular. That's why I like, and because it sounds like it's so specific in that it names the members of the band who are all in agreement, you know, that we're anticipating the death of the subject of the song and so on. I think there's something intuitive about everything we do, you know, that you feel the sort of gravitational pull of an idea and you don't know why it appeals, but the sort of like the mission is to pursue that and find out where it's going to take you. And that's, you know, sometimes you go places that are very unexpected, and that's a good result.
I'm so tired of your lies and the evil things you're doing behind my back. Are the crimes that you have never committed? I doubt it sometimes. I wonder when will you die? You're insane, you are bad. You wreck everything you touch and you're a sociopath. There's just one thing that everyone's wondering: when will you die? School children stay at home, yeah. And all the banks will close, yeah. Each year we'll mark the date, yeah. On which we celebrate. I know how, I know why. I can picture every part of your commercial.
Feels like a bit of a song like that. I mean, there's, you know, you're getting a really good riff in there, you know, musically.
Uh-huh.
You know, very, very, very strong. So I guess having created, because that's a dialer song, part of that, the last batch of dialer songs, I guess it helps having such a volume of songs to pick the very best.
Yeah, well, we do deal in volume. I mean, part of it is just that we've been doing this for so long, and there's two of us, we still really like writing songs. It seems like we put out a lot of stuff, but it's not that many songs for either of us individually over the course of a year. You know, it's just we've literally been doing this, well, for, I guess we started writing songs in the early 80s together. It's something like 35 years of us collaborating. So there is a lot of backlog.
You and I will be together when we shed our
song Last Wave feels fitting as one of the closing tracks, given the theme of it, but also...
Oh, sure.
Again, that's a song which you do live, and understand there's a something interesting you do visually with that when you're live on stage.
Yes, yeah, I can tell you what. The song was actually written by reading the lips of the people who were singing and performing on a 1980s video, and it was a collaboration between Aerosmith and Run DMC, big hit in the US. I don't know if it made any waves over there, but
yeah, it was a hit.
It's their version of Walk This Way. It was a song that Aerosmith had a big hit with, and then they did a collaboration with Run DMC. And so there's this kind of humorous video where they're having like a sort of battle of the bands. And so what we did is we wrote the song just to exactly match the lips that are moving in the video with the sound turned off. And the song has no other relationship to the original Aerosmith song. It doesn't, the melody and the words are all completely different. And everything about it sounds different. It was a way of writing a song that, you know, we hadn't tried before, that seemed like, oh, well, this is a good, this might be a good way to like come up with a completely different sounding track. You know, if we just follow the rule of like, it has to appear that the video goes along with the music. And then the words in a way kind of wrote themselves based on that, because they had to sort of match the lip sync of the vocalist. And so, yeah, we during our show, as you suggested, we show the Aerosmith video is shown with, along with the soundtrack, which is our version of our demo version of that song. We did a slightly different recording for the album, just to make things even more complicated. And that version does not go along with the Aerosmith video, but it's pretty much the same song.
Wave, rolling by, final wave, don't ask why.
So then you're still continuing Dial a Song, and I know you're kind of in the middle of a tour at the minute. You're at the back end of the European side, and then you're going back over.
We're having a great sort of return trip to Germany, which, you know, most of these places we have not played in decades. And tonight we're playing in Cologne, where the last time we played here was 1989. So we are almost at the 30-year mark of, like, we have not played in this town in three decades, and we're playing in the exact same place we played in the late 80s, which will be interesting. We'll see what that's like.
And then to close, you've got another song out, I think, in the last few days, Thankful for Your Service. I understand that that's also had another title as well.
Yeah, that was commissioned. Part of a collection of songs about the various constitutional amendments, the United States Constitution's list of amendments, which have been added to over the years. And this is our song is about Amendment Number 3, which is this sort of peculiar one that's prohibiting the billeting of soldiers in private homes, which is not a very controversial topic nowadays. It's not something people are too worried about, but I guess in the late 18th century, it was a problem that people felt oppressed by the government putting soldiers into their houses during warfare. And so they wrote an amendment that said that that's no longer going to be allowed.
Okay, well, I will keep looking for the various Dialer songs that come out, and all the best for your forthcoming tour. And plus that, thank you for all the joy that you're giving my 5-year-old daughter on the Here Come the ABCs.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, she's more than welcome.
It still resonates.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah, absolutely, yes. Our pleasure. And we look forward to coming back to Leeds at some point. That was that was the beginning of this leg of the tour, and it was a very
brilliant.
That's where you are, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really fun show. We kind of kicked off the whole thing in Leeds. So we'll be back.
I will look forward to it. Maybe at the Brudenell.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, John.
Very good. All right. No problem. Nice speaking with you, Jason.
Take care. Thank you. Then. Bye bye.
Okay, bye.
At the bottom of the kitchen trash, I found the empty container of takeout food with my name clearly written on it. Following a trail of footsteps from the standing water in the bathroom, I discovered my soaking wet bedroom slippers in the hallway. Of so many friendly strangers makes me nervous, and it doesn't mean that I'm not truly thankful for your service. Lately I've been spending more and more of my free time hanging out in the empty back room of the diner just up the highway, and it's just to give you elbow room that I've been making use of the sleeping bag that I keep rolled up and stashed behind my couch. Do you think that I think I'm somehow better than you? Please accept my word that nothing could be further from the truth. But the presence of so many friendly strangers makes me nervous, and it doesn't mean that I'm not truly thankful for your service.
Thank you for listening to the Strange Brew podcast. If you do like the show, please consider supporting me on Patreon. Patrons get access to unedited interviews as they're done, news, plus even access to my exclusive interview archive. All your support goes into keeping the show running and moving forward and getting amazing guests. To support me, just go to patreon.com/strangebrewpod or go to thestrangebrew.co.uk/about. Thanks very much, and any reviews on your podcasting services are greatly appreciated. Thank you.